So welcome, everyone. This is the Ohio Writers Guild. And tonight I have Sandy Kaczurek. Nice to see you. She is not only my co-host, but she also is our guest tonight. And so we get to learn a lot more about Sandy, and I can't wait to ask her a boatload of questions that I've been saving up. And so I want to start off, Sandy. I want you to tell us a little bit about your backstory and how you even started writing. Where did that begin for you?
I started off as a reader. That was number one. I loved reading, still love reading. And I remember, funny how little things stand out. In eighth grade, we were asked to write a poem. And I wrote a poem. And I remember the sister, Mary Herbert, correcting the spelling of there. I had spelled T-H-E-I-R-T-H-E-R-E-R-E. A classic error today. And I thought, no, this has to look good. But it was the story of whatever the poem, the emotions and so forth. She liked it. I got a little gold sticker on it, nevertheless, even though there were two little red marking pen marks over those two misspelled words. But I liked that, the idea of putting words. I never was afraid to write. I was shy, but I could always write. And I had a journal for a while, but there was a 3-bedroom house and 6 children and 2 parents. So unless I buried it somewhere in the backyard, my brothers or sisters would find it. And that was going to be the last of that. But that started where I could tell my story. And for anyone trying to this whole writing thing, maybe writing your own story as a start would be great. And as I went into high school, I got involved. I was an assistant to the reading teacher, and I enjoyed that. And when in my senior expository writing, which was nonfiction, I remember my teacher, Mr. Mazzucco, holding up my essay in class and saying, "This is college writing. So this is excellent." Like, wow, I swooned. I go, that's it. I'm going to go into writing. And what I had done is head toward high school writing. It was more my level rather than working with kindergarten children or middle school children. High school was where I was, and I was there for a very long time. And it was all those years of trying to explain to students who I'd say a good 75% of them didn't want to be in an English class at all. They'd rather be doing just about anything else besides sitting there in that classroom for 45 minutes a day. And how do I get them to pass the class for number one, for those who didn't, and get them understanding that process and how words are shaped and how you can express yourself. So it's just getting their exercises done, answering questions to a story. And it forced me, of course, to analyze stories, because if I'm teaching, The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe, it's a short story. A lot of folks know it. But what really was Poe thinking when he put that together? And that fascinated me. Probably more than it did the students sometimes, but it fascinated me and it got me looking like behind the scenes. How did Peter Pan fly? The old version, Mary Martin, if you remember, she did that. How did she fly? And even though maybe you caught some behind the scenes and you saw the cables and the pulleys, to me, that was as fascinating as seeing her fly. And that to me is like a story. It's to read Alice Walker's The Color Purple is exciting. To hear Alice Walker talk about how she put together the story was fascinating. And that grew through all those years of teaching high school English and training students for, I had students who just wanted to pass the class. I had students in advanced placement who wanted to know enough that they could write 3 very intelligent college-bound essays in 2 hours, and it'll get them enough credit to be able to bypass English in college if they were good enough. And I had a lot of students who made that mark. So I learned myself that it's also about audience. Who are you talking? Whom are you talking to? Are you, if you're writing a story for children, it's definitely going to sound differently than if you're writing a story for teenagers or writing a story for adults. So that was teaching me, maybe unbeknownst to me, but I liked it because I was fascinated by it. This skill that just came out of people's minds and hearts on paper in whatever form fascinated me. So somewhere, probably about 10 or 12 years before I was getting ready to step away from teaching, I thought, well, now what am I going to do? I would always find work teaching somewhere, definitely. But I wanted to be a writer. And I read about people like Stephen King, who taught English as well until he sold Carrie, made a lot of money on it, and said, well, that's that. I'm not going back in the classroom, because learning how to write professionally takes time. Mm-hmm. And if there's something, particularly in the writing world in the last 15, 20 years, things change in reading. And it's all about the audience. Who's reading what now? And I knew I needed to learn. I could have stuck around in teaching for quite a few years more, but I only had so much time left once I left that classroom. And much like becoming a good teacher, it was going to take me a while to become a good writer. So I started writing while I was teaching. And that's why my two published books, someone picked me up, Enslow Printing. They're not around anymore, but Enslow did all biographical nonfiction publishing. And they were looking for someone to write these biographies. And it's all about community too. I had a friend that I started seeing, because in the summer I'd go to professional writing conferences instead of English teacher conferences, which were different. And I was adjusting to that world of professional writers. And a friend of mine, she was writing for this Enslow quite a bit. And when she was too busy, when they said, hey, you know, George W. Bush is going to be inaugurated, we need a biography of him for our company. And my friend said, oh, I'm too busy, but I know somebody. Now, mind you, this would be the very first professional book I had ever done. I was playing with short stories, but didn't quite know where to go with them.
Were you nervous to write this?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, yes, definitely. Because I thought, holy smokes, man. But it fit because I taught research paper. Mm-hmm. So I knew how to research. And on a sidelight, thank goodness George W. Bush had a father who was very well known, because otherwise I don't know where I would go to have found all the material I needed to get this book off the ground. So I read just about everything about H.W. Bush and kept looking for, okay, what about his son? What about his son? And then reading all the material that had come out in magazines and newspapers. And I got in touch with the Republican Party at that time. And was that like 2000, somewhere like that. And that person gave me a lot of material, allowed me to work in the, presidential libraries to find things. And it took me a whole summer. Teachers are busy in the summer, no doubt about it. But I spent that summer doing an awful lot of research. And then that coming fall is when I was putting it words to the page. And another sidelight, you know, the first chapter always has to be a hook. And that's the same in biographies as well. And I had it, if you remember, Bush and Gore were nose to nose when we were all done voting for them. And they didn't know how. It took like 33 days before the Supreme Court decided who was president. And it was kind of like on the edge of a dime or edge of a quarter. And that's how I started my first chapter. And I had to turn it in. And they said, yeah, no, this is really good. Well, this is a really, really horrible thing to say. But then there was 9/11. And as soon as 9/11 happened and the grief of it was over, I realized I had to redo everything, because that first chapter about that, how Bush got elected was nothing compared mm-hmm. to how he handled 911. So going back and reworking it and making sure that all the chapters flowed. And for me, because biographies by and large are chronological, so you already have that plot there. You don't have to think, well, what should go next? It was there, and I could look it up in a book or look it up in researcher, and Google wasn't that strong way back in 2000, but it was helpful nevertheless. And I had to rework it, but it was the thread. There's always a thread. There's always something connecting even pieces of our lives together. So I learned that. And while that was off to the editors, and like I had mentioned once not long ago about the writing process and who's your alpha reader or your beta reader rather, they sent my book to have it read by a professor of history at Southern Methodist University in Texas.
Oh, no. So,
holy moly, why didn't you just give it to Mr. Bush himself and have him read it? Ooh, oh, my gosh. And I was tickled, number one, because that English teacher was still in me, because I was still, mm-hmm. I hadn't stepped away yet. And I was excited because there were very few grammatical errors. So I thought, wow, look at that. And then there were a couple of things I needed to polish up or add to, but overall it got a decent stamp of approval. And that made me feel well. I've gotten a lot of rejections and other things. Most of my fiction pieces, and everybody says, you know, chin up, go for it, continue on. But there is always something when somebody says, this is pretty good. This will work. So there is that. And then the same company, once they had the book and it was now going through their process of publishing, they assigned me another one, said, hey, would you like to do Francisco Pizarro, the Spanish explorer of South America? And this one was for little kids. This was for elementary school students. And that's when it's like a totally different audience. And, you know, we talk in high praise of our explorers who managed to explore these countries, but they did run into a lot of natives and they didn't always treat those natives well. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to tell this story to little ones about Pizarro, who wasn't always, you know, the hero that we think him to be? So working through that, again, who's your audience? How do you tell a love story to teenagers versus a love story to adults? How do you tell a story to little ones? You know, there's a lot of beautiful stories, picture books about loving your parents and all that and how that changes. So I learned a lot about audiences. So that's kind of my launching pad, was way back in the teachers who acknowledge that I was doing well, to saving myself of being in a house full of so many people in such a small house and having those moments of writing to myself, and then teachers in high school, and then going on to college, and my college professors by and large enjoyed my writing, and then just being always surrounded by the power of the word and having to explain it to people who don't want to understand it, but then knowing that they finally get it or they can work it out somehow in their world, whether they never enter an English classroom, never become a writer, they can enjoy the power of story. Now, not all of them did, of course, but I remember one student, I always had to put the bad students sitting up in the front row. And this one student was bad, but you know, they're sometimes the bad students have such beautiful, crazy personalities. I would joke with them more. So I remember seeing one after he had graduated, and here he is coming out of the public library with a stack of books in his hands. And he was there. He bought them for himself. And so, you know, stories like that, someone else who was now picking up reading more because He had children of his own and he wanted to read to them. So yeah, it's always the beauty and the fascination, and it's an escape. It's frustrating at times, definitely. But so is almost everything we try. But yeah.
Oh, but you know what? It's definitely worth a try.
Yeah, that's how I got my feet in it, definitely.
Well, when you got the project to write the book, did they tell you, like, this is how many pages it has to be? This is what we wanted to, I mean, how much freedom did you have in writing the story?
In this particular case, because I was kind of, in a sense, assigned it, when you're writing nonfiction and you're trying to promote a nonfiction, including memoir, I believe this is still true, you have to give them a proposal. And it's totally different from fiction. You know, they know that if it's a story about your life or a story about how to sell a house, they know how the story is going to end and they know how the plot's going to be, basically. In a fiction book, there's not that. So you have to have your fiction book completely done when you go pitching it to agents or editors or wherever you're going, if you're not publishing it yourself.
Okay.
In nonfiction, they told you, in this case, they told me we needed to be this many thousands of words. And this was for, this wasn't, it wasn't for adults necessarily, though it fit that. Their audience was hopefully high school. So okay. They were looking for that. So they said, we'd like to have a couple of images in there. So it's like, oh, okay, you need some photographs. So I had to do some research on that and get permission and buy a couple to make sure it fit, like hometown or his picture that you see of all the presidents with the flag behind them and everything. So yes, in that case, in my case, you have a list of must do's. So, but then after that, you know, it's like, you know, give us a couple thousand or whatever the thousands words are on his life. And approximately, you always think in even numbers, like 10 chapters. So I thought 10 and how would I divide it into that? And what did I have to let go and so on?
Yeah. Well, as you're teaching, so of course, you know, you loved, again, early on, you loved mm-hmm. the reading and then you mm-hmm. loved the writing and then you went into teaching and of course, teaching English. And so now at some point, what made you know that you were actually ready to write a book that you even said yes to that project? I would be afraid to say yes to the project.
Only because I put it in a world that I understood. Because again, because I had taught research papers for ages and trying to break it down for juniors in high school, 11th graders, to say this isn't as scary as it sounds. You can do this in 6 weeks. I'm thinking, well, let's see. I could probably do this. And I think for me, because it was nonfiction and because it was a person's real life that I could follow, I wasn't making anything up. And I think as I write my short stories today and how critical that first page is, that first paragraph is, that to me is probably by far the hardest thing. Once I get past that first page, I'm good to go. I start to see the plot kind of form. But I don't recall ever hesitating. I always have a time clock ticking somewhere. And because I had only a summer to do all my research and I had an environment in which I could work. My house, unlike my parents' house, was not full of little children. And I was used to doing a lot of grading and a lot of reworking students writing, like, look at this. This is how to better sound for that. I just applied what I had been teaching to myself. So it wasn't as challenging. It wasn't as challenging as I would say if they told me, we want you to write a fiction story about, you know, somebody robbing a bank in Springfield, Ohio. That, holy smokes, I don't know what I would have done then. But this was something I could grasp easily.
Okay, well, and so that was going to be my next question is how, what did your day look like? How did you find time and to write this book? Did you actually set aside time for, we've got a lot of newbies that listen in on this call and they want to write, they want to get started. They really not sure how to do that. Did you mm-hmm. have a set time of day that you would write each day, or did, are you a writer that you write when the mood strikes? What type of a writer are you?
You know what? I love deadlines. I love somebody telling me what to do. And because I knew I had an enforced deadline with this company, okay, and I wasn't going to embarrass myself by not having it done, that helped. And mm-hmm. that's the same with any kind of writing. To me, I struggle more with, now that I'm writing on my own, and no one cares if I have my story done. That to me is the most challenging, because I find it easier to let go of, well, I'll get to it in the morning, and then morning comes, well, I could do it later, because who's really expecting it?
Right.
And even now, when I get into that, I don't know if you've heard of NaNoWriMo, which is National mm-hmm. Novel Writing Month in November.
Yes. Yes.
And National Novel Writing Month in November, and they have things all year long, but I grasp onto that, the November one. And I don't tell necessarily folks what I'm writing, or you could be as invisible as you want, but I go online and I clock in and I divide it up, and I know I need about 1700 words a day to make 50,000 by the end of the month. And you know, I make that.
Okay.
Because it's someone else's imposed deadline. I would say, if you had somebody you believed in that you didn't want to let down, let's say it's your mother or your spouse or something, and if you could have them say, you know what I want for the holidays or Christmas or my birthday? I want your story. I want your book down, or I want your anthology of short stories, and make it so that you, the writer, believes that that's exactly what they want. I bet you'll get it done. Because mm-hmm. it's amazing how many of us, if you're working and you examine how many times you make your deadline, even mm-hmm. if it means you're working faster in the last hour of the deadline than ever, you make it. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with writing. If you can find some way of being imposed upon to get this done, that would be great. If you're doing short stories, if it's fiction, and you start to go to, there's a site called Submittable. And there they have all the online magazines and their deadlines and their content. What are they looking for? And they only have like maybe 30-day submission window. So you only have 30 days to get this story in, and they won't open up again until like 5 months later. And then they'll do another 30 days. So if you can work in that and find a site that has, find a magazine, e-magazine that captures something that you're writing, like say it's about being a mom of some kind. Maybe there's a magazine out there that's all about parenthood, and you see it and they have a window coming up in July. Oh my gosh, shoot for mm-hmm. that. That's what I would do. If you have those, you know, e-calendars that will have mm-hmm. little alarm bells. And if you're kind of mathematical or very, very precise and come up with how many words do you want that story to be, they'll tell you. Maybe it's only 1300 words, or maybe it's no more than 5,000 words. Write that down, divide it up, saying, okay, I have until Mother's Day for this. And that's so many days. That means I've got to do something like that, because most of us are conditioned because we did go to school, and we're conditioned by bells and assignments and requirements and making and workloads that's what works for me.
Well, and I always tell my daughter, there's nothing like a good, healthy deadline.
Oh, yes.
No, I understand that completely. I get it.
Right.
And I always shorten the deadline for myself. Now that's really, sounds kind of silly when I hear it out loud, because mm-hmm. I'm the one making the deadline. So I know that it's not the real deadline. So how does that work? But for some reason that works for me.
Yeah.
So if I have to have it done by Tuesday of next week, I say I have to have it done by Friday of this week instead.
Oh, that's great. I like that idea. I like that idea a lot.
And then that way I have time, like over the weekend, to, as I like to say, I like to walk away from my writing and mm-hmm. let it get cold.
Yep.
And then come back and read it again. And then that way things that need to be changed are very clear to me.
Perfect.
And perfect. So it gives
I would write, I would clue, I would do that. I recommend that's beautiful mm-hmm. advice for anybody writing. Anybody.
Yeah. So I do that a lot, is that I'll give myself that buffer of another, you know, 3 or 4 days so that I have time for it to get cold.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is, you've got distance, and there's something mm-hmm. about that, that you're not the person you were when you were writing it. You're now kind of like the reader, and that's important.
Yes. Yes. And I like to read it out loud too. Yep. That makes a yes. difference. So now this is not the book you were talking about. That is not the only book that you've written. And then you came back around and you wrote the one, you know, for the younger audience. Mm-hmm. What else have you written since then?
Since then, I started out a lot with looking for more fiction, because I wanted to do fiction. And in the summer, like I said, I was an English teacher, did a lot of analytical teaching, blah, blah, blah. But in the summer, when I did have some time, I was a fantasy reader. Oh my gosh, mermaids. Oh, I love mermaids, dragons, that whole thing. So I always dreamed about, you know, people dream about My Little Pony. Well, I always dreamed about being a mermaid. And that was the first story that when I put the nonfiction aside, I thought, I'm just going to retell this dream about being a mermaid. And you know what? That dream lasted one page. I go, that's it? That's all? So I had to figure out, well, how do you write these things? How do I get a whole story about a mermaid that's more than one page and is closer to 300 pages? And that's when I really started to peruse how to write,
okay.
Going to writing workshops, talking to writers, friends of mine that I was comfortable talking with who had already started and have been on their journey. I joined a writer's groups, some very small scale. Over the years, I've kind of advanced now. I'm in more of an advanced writer's group. And you know, it's always like when you hit that kind of not permanent, but that block in the road, and it's because you don't know something. And that's when you start to figure out, or if you're struggling. Now, you can't make it an excuse, because that's easy to do too, going, well, I just don't know. I'm going to put that off. Well, I'll just continue writing anyway. I could have gotten a bachelor's in marine biology by the time I was done writing my mermaid book, because, and at some point it became an excuse, like, oh, I got to do research today, because writing is a challenge, especially when you're doing fantasy writing and anything can happen. But that's when I started that. I queried it to agents, because back then, and I can't, probably we're talking mid-2000s, and
okay.
self-publishing wasn't quite the thing. You were still, mm-hmm. if you were self-publishing, you were going to a Xerox store and having them print your book off and making a little binder edge for it or stapling it. So it was different then. You needed an agent or an editor, and an editor is someone who owns the company themselves or the magazine company themselves, and they're a smaller type. Mm-hmm. But so I started finding out, well, how do you pitch? How do you write query letters? How do I decipher this crazy, you know, now it's an 80,000 word story, but their query, you could tell them the story in less than 50 words. I go, what in the world? So a lot of little things like that. Then I heard, well, agents really like it if you meet them in person. I go, well, where do you meet an agent besides going to New York City? And again, it comes down to writing workshops, writing conventions, something like that. They, because agents were the pseudo celebrities. They were the one step close to Stephen King status. And so you met them and you talked with them or listened to them talk and you find out how to do it. And then you blow it and then you try again and then you try again. And, you know, you think, oh my God, they'll never listen to me again. Nah. They have so many people coming through. You just do it again. And
so, how long did you pitch or do the query letters? How long did it take you before you got that one published?
I have not gotten that mermaid novel published. I ended up doing, and here's the thing, when I got so into it going, maybe, and this was when I was rejected enough, I thought, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe I don't know how to write a novel. And again, it's like, I only have so many lives left. A novel is awfully long. Maybe in order to polish it, I'll start with short stories. So that's when I turned to short stories, because it had everything a novel did, just very, very quick. And that doesn't mean somebody who writes novels can easily write a short story, or someone who writes short stories can easily write a novel. If you can write a short story, that is amazing. And because so much has to happen in just so few words. But I found that, and then I started selling my short stories. And that's what I did a lot of. And then I got involved in some other avenues of writing and didn't get back to that. Now I've got a book. I'm now at my second book. And they always talk about the book under the bed. And that's the first one that kind of you tried. I still think that mermaid book has a following. And now that I'm wiser and I've done enough of these workshops and listened to enough authors talk, I bet you I could go back and really polish that, because she's a great story. And there are trends out there. When I started writing her, that was back in the mid-2000s, and mermaids were big time. And now I see that they're big time again. And that usually, it's like the fan fiction we talk about. Mm-hmm. People usually go looking for things similar to, you know, she won't have her own blog, I don't think. But there is a chance. There is a chance that maybe somebody will see The Little Mermaid has come out. And man, I wished I would have had that book ready to roll, because that might be, somebody will want that. You know, people love movies. They love the book of the movies. Mm-hmm. They're talking about it and so forth. So yeah, and because I was more disciplined when I was teaching, because I only had limited amounts of time. So that self-discipline is excellent. Afterwards, not as much. I got a kick out of going to conferences, finding out what genre did I like to write in. And that was the other thing. There are women's nonfiction conferences and science fiction and fantasy and horror and all that. It's out there, and if whatever you like, look for it, Google it, and see where it is closest to home for you, that you don't have to pay for a hotel for a weekend, so you can enjoy yourself there with limited expenses. Mm-hmm.
So has your taste changed over the years from where you started? I mean, if you, you know, were commissioned to write a story today, what would it be in a perfect world?
Wow. You know, I would think it would still probably, I got into women fiction, issues facing women, and it's, they say, write what you know-ish. Mm-hmm. I, for many years, over 10 years or so, I have been a volunteer at a thrift shop. And in this thrift, and it's for the local community, it's run by a lot of women, and all the proceeds go to the back into the community in various ways. And I used to manage it. I used to run it. I used to be president of the organization. And I have worked in that little thrift shop so well. I said, you know what? I'm going to make this pay. So I have this women's story, and okay. It's about a woman who was a teacher, and she comes into town, and she ends up being a part of this thrift shop. Now, here's the kicker. Here's where I'm at, because that fantasy, I keep being drawn to maybe some pair of old shoes in there is going to talk. So but I feel now more confident in getting that story done. So I'm and getting it. Another part is because I'm director of this writer's workshop, you know, I don't want to nonfiction books to be my only background and a variety of short stories, although you know, I'm very proud of them. I found places because I'm kind of shy and I wasn't doing too well at querying with agents. My area used to have these open mic readings, and I have no problem reading aloud. So I would take my short stories and I would sign up to read, and then I would get up there and read my stories. And so I got out there, and I had to have it ready by such and such a date for this event. So to me, always think of a deadline. Always think of where can you tell your story, even if you're a part of it. That's all, because they don't give you that much time, maybe 5 minutes, maybe 10 mm-hmm. minutes, and that's probably about 800 words. So yeah, definitely. Always look around and what are you comfortable? And if you're comfortable reading aloud, go with it that way and force yourself to have a deadline somewhere. And a lot of things are opened up now that hadn't been 2 years ago. There's something for you out there to show your stuff.
I love it. And you mentioned the writer's workshop. So you have gone to several writer's mm-hmm. workshops. And they've been very inspirational, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I went to my first one not too long ago, which I shared with you. So tell us, what was the first writer's workshop that you ever went to, and what impact did it have on you?
This is interesting. I was part of a women's group for probably now, in the end, it was about 20 years, but at the time it was about 10. And there's only about six of us. We had gone through a woman's kind of enlightenment program. And then we started meeting after the program was over about once every 2 or 3 months, because we didn't live close to each other. And there was somebody's idea of, we should write a book about this. Well, I was the designated one and willingly took it on. And that, there you go again. I had my deadline. I wasn't going to let these other women down. Mm-hmm. Well, I always took notes of what we were talking about. And now I needed to know where to go. So I had a woman's story. And close to me in Yellow Springs, Ohio, actually where my workshop is located now, almost 30 years, a workshop that met in Yellow Springs, every summer for a week in July. And I went there talking about this book. And is there any, they had some editors from magazines or book publishing companies, they had agents. And someone just gave me a boost there, gave me her business card and said, hey, you ever get that done, let us know. Now the book didn't come to fruition, but that was the start. And then when I had time, I thought, well, maybe women's fiction or women's uh-huh. writing is what I should do. And I found not far in Kentucky, there was the Northern Kentucky Women's Conference. So I went there. And then from there, I went to something else I read somewhere that sounded, wow, I could do this. And I was dabbling willingly and happily while I made my decision to kind of do more of a fantasy type. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up going to a lot more fantasy conventions and reading.
And more. They're a lot of fun, and you meet so many amazing people.
You do.
Yes, I love it. I love it. So with all of that said, how did you get connected, and what made you decide to get involved in the leadership portion of a writer's workshop? How did that all start for you?
No brag, but I'm very organized.
Okay.
I am very responsible and I take my duties seriously.
And you don't want to let anybody down.
I don't want to let anybody out. Oh my gosh, no. I'm one of those, again, if you're coming over to my house, or if I have a family get together or anything like that, and I'm serving food, I always have too much, because mm-hmm. you just never know. I'd rather have too much than let somebody down and saying, sorry, we don't have any of that. So again, with this, in Yellow Springs, this workshop that was there for 30 some years had run its course, and it wasn't there. And a friend of mine had said, hey, would you like to, I'm thinking of putting a workshop together. Would you be interested? I go, sure, I'll help you. That's not a problem. So I helped design her first two in Yellow Springs. And then the first year, it went off fairly well. And then the second, by that time, I had a lot of writer friends I added romance writing to my itineraries, and I belong to a romance writers group, still do. So I've got all these different genres going on. So a lot of my friends came and taught that first year, or presented at the first workshop. And second year, the same, but my friend had health problems and asked me if I'd fill in. I said, okay. Sure, I'll fill in with you. And then after that, she goes, Sandy, you know, if you want this workshop, you can have it. I have no idea. It's much like the George W. Bush. I have no idea why I didn't say no. But I think in 2000, that was, let's see, she started in 2018, 2019 is when I kind of oversaw things. And then I thought, yeah, I could do this, mm-hmm. because I was ready for almost the sole leadership. I knew people in the writing business. I knew how to design a curriculum in school. I was department chair and so forth. I knew how I wanted it. And more than anything, I thought I could now create the type of workshop that I would love to go to. And in 2020, of course, we were stopped by the pandemic, but in 2021, rather than have different authors from different genres just come in and talk to the same people, they were all in the same room, that did stay the same. I thought, you know what, I'm going to have this where the same authors, I won't have a lot of different genres, I'll focus on two, maybe three, and then work it so that as soon as a writer comes into the room, they're going to be met with a whole weekend of opportunity to do a lot of finite detail to their own writing. So starting at 5:00, they'd be in that first session. Then that instructor would step aside and another instructor get up and do something a little different because it was a different genre, but yet make it so that everybody in the room can have some piece of it that they could relate to. Whether it was, if they weren't a mystery writer, that mystery author could still say something, mm-hmm. and being very aware that they were talking to a general audience of various levels of writing as well. So I was really excited about being able to create that. And I wanted folks to go home exhausted, but thrilled,
yes.
thrilled with everything. And every year I do one more thing at least to add to it. And it depends on who I have, and whom I'm reaching out to, what their skills are. I'm getting a little nervous because I haven't picked 2024 yet, and I like to have that done by now. But I'm looking in the world out there. I'm kind of looking, hoping for a memoir writer and mm-hmm. a mystery writer. I haven't had those two types of writing for this. So
oh, then, I'm in. I'm in because I want to do mystery. So I'm in. Yes.
Well, there are a lot of mystery writers out there because, of course, I also need money to run this thing. It's a one woman operation. And I know there are a lot of mystery writers. Last year I had a romance writer. I know there are a lot of romance writers out there, but I also know there are general writers who want to get started. Mm-hmm. And again, my featured authors have to be gifted to be able to talk to almost anybody. And they have been. I've been totally thrilled and blessed by whom I've had come on board.
I love it. So the workshop for those that are listening is called Into the Springs Writers Workshop. And you can find all the information at intothespringswritersworkshop.com. Am I correct?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So I put that in the chat. Thank you. I'll post that actually in the description of our video when we're done so that folks can find that. And so now tell me, what is this workshop for those that have never been to one? What's it going to look like? How's it going to unfold?
Here's how I have it designed. I want writers to come in and sit in an area where they can see the speakers. The speakers, the two guests, Jane and Jason, are going to be up front. There's going to be a lot of like PowerPoint sort of things going on too. And they'll be able to listen. Like, for example, the very first one is about Jane and Jason are both going to talk about publishing trends and what to watch in the writing world. What are people looking for? It's like, are mermaids selling or is something else selling? Or now we have Chat GPT, the chat mm-hmm. bots out there. What kind of effect are they having on writing? So they're going to now, my speakers are going to now speak. Jane's going to go first and then Jason will follow up because he looks at it a little differently than she does. And my participants will be taking down notes. And at any point, they can raise a hand and ask a question or put their kind of two cents in if it's relative to the discussion going on. And because I know these two speakers, my guest speakers well, I know that they can handle almost anything being asked of them. And so that's another thing that I like about this. There'll definitely be refreshments because sometimes we get glued to our seats there mm-hmm. and to have to go up and go out and go down the street to look for something, though Yellow Springs has a lot to pick from. You know, I will have refreshments there. And especially because I start on a 5 o'clock on a Friday and that's kind of like dinner time. So there mm-hmm. will be fruit trays and that. And there'll be things like baskets of pens and pencils and paper, because I don't want anybody to go, oh, darn, I forgot to bring my fill in the blank. I have a newsletter and I remind my participants, here are some things I want you to consider bringing and so forth. So they're always prepared because I remember that's what I liked. I like to bring my little book bag filled with all the stuff mm-hmm. I needed. And so people on Saturday, like I even have you still glued to your chair for lunch. It's going to be served in the banquet hall. So you can now sit. I wanted to create areas in which you can raise your hand and ask the question in kind of an academic setting. But then there will be these little time periods, such as breaks and such as lunch, where you could sit and talk, and however you feel comfortable asking your question. If it's at lunch, then that's fine. Maybe you didn't want to ask in front of everybody else, but sitting at the same table with Jane, you'll ask her or ask Jason. And so I've created that, I hope. And then Saturday night is just a little more, how else can we celebrate writing?
Okay.
And that's the activities there too, where you can get up and read your own, or I have two actors. Again, I don't want anybody to say, I'm afraid I love to write, but I don't want to read my stuff in front of people. So, hey, how can I have somebody do that nevertheless? Well, how about if I get somebody who's not even connected with the workshop to come in and do it for them?
So I love that. Yes.
So that
goes Saturday night, and then folks can hang out as late as they want.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And then they're back Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm. And it wraps up by noon. And Sunday is definitely, you can feel things start to kind of slow down again because people are realizing, Was the babysitter okay? I told grandma I'd see her Sunday night. And so reality kind of starts to seep in again. But we do have one more workshop. And then I talk about the coming year. I ask them, okay, this is all about me now. What did you think? Turn in your surveys and, you know, think. And I have a dorky little thing where I take a family photo. I have people, okay. I take a group photo and I keep it for posterity and I put it on the website or on the Facebook page. So there's something in which I hope. And you had mentioned, Kathy, about an agent. Next year, I will have an agent because I have a new program where I'm starting effective first lines, where you read the first couple paragraphs of your story, and then Jane and Jason will determine how effective is it for an agent or an editor to want to pick it up.
Okay. And, how much of your story do you have to have done to read the first paragraph?
250 words. 250 words. Uh-huh. Because okay. That's how, you know, agents will say, if you ever have a query, they may say, oh, give us your first 10 pages or uh-huh. or give us your first chapter or something. What you're shooting for is for the agent to come back and say, oh, this is interesting. I'd like to see 50 pages. That is a big deal. That's step one. You're getting closer to possibly having an agent propose something if you're going with the traditional publishing. But
I think I told you when the workshop that I went to, they were doing that. They were reading the first page. And I remember that the gal that was sitting, because we were all classroom style, and the gal that was sitting in the row ahead of me, just a little bit to my left, they just kept reading. And they said, well, what we're going to do as publishers is we're going to raise our hand if we were back in our office, in our desk, reading this manuscript, where we would stop.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they would get through a sentence or two and both their hands would go up. They would get through a half a page and one hand would go up. And finally, the guy reading, he just kept reading and reading and reading. And finally he finished. He said, that's all I got. I read the whole thing. And they said, both of them said, oh, we want more. We want more of that one. Yeah. And the girl slightly ahead of me to the left, I saw under the desk, I saw her go, yes. So I made the assumption it was her manuscript.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Well, and that's from you talking about that, I polished it up because I do have it on as effective first lines, but I had it where the author, you know, the participant would read his or her or their own work. And I thought, okay, oh my gosh, and then get critiqued, really? So I go, that's right, because I had attended one similar to you. And that's what they did. They did it all in a pile. And then they pulled one out and somebody else read it.
Nobody really knew whose it was. And so one would be embarrassed, totally bad. They weren't embarrassed.
Yeah. And that's how I decided the actors who are coming in for Saturday night readings. I had sent them an email saying, hey, are you available for, you know, Saturday afternoon before lunch? Could you read some of these? And if not, that's not a problem. I can have folks do it. But take that part of it away. And the other thing is get to hear people read your material.
Yes.
That's another thing, to hear it out there, even if you're reading it yourself, to read to an audience that you're not familiar with. And how does it go? How does it work? And maybe I'm thinking about folks who want writing groups. Maybe I'll have a chart like a clipboard set out saying I'm interested in getting a workshop or joining a writer's group, or I'm looking for beta readers or something of that sort. And I'm always looking to how much more can I offer within the time frame that I have. And it's been a thrill when I have so many of my folks attending have attended before and they look forward to it. So yeah, really.
Well, I'm excited. I can't wait. I think it's going to be lots of fun. Now give us the date. It's August.
August 4th, 5th, and 6th at the Mills Park Hotel in the heart of Yellow Springs. You don't have to stay there. It's kind of pricey, but what's lovely is it's owned by two, they used to be high school band teachers, marching band leaders. And I go, huh, education keeps hitting me every time. So they're wonderful to work with. But there's lodging all around Yellow Springs and people are commuting as well. So definitely save pennies where you can. But August 4th, 5th, and 6th at the Mills Park Hotel, go to the website. There's a lot there. Or my email address is sandy@intothespringsridersworkshop.com. And you can send me an email. Be happy to chat with you there as well.
Love that. So, yeah. And I'll put that also in the description of the replays. And so just remember intothespringsridersworkshop.com. If you want to contact Sandy directly, just put Sandy at the beginning of that, intothespringsridersworkshop.com. But go to the website and check it out. You don't want to miss it. If you want to start writing, you go to this writer's workshop. Yep. And hang out with folks that are making it happen.
And especially, Jane is bringing in an aspect that even polished writers and published writers shy away from. And that's all the marketing. How do you market yourself? What does your author website need to look for? What the heck are they talking when they talk about platform? So yeah, it's going to really hit home for a lot of folks on whatever basis they're writing.
I love it. I love it. I can't wait to go. Sandy, thank you so much for your time tonight. This has been so much fun. I learn more about you each time we chat. So I love that. Again, for those of you that are listening, I'm Kathy Binner with kathybinner.com. If you want to find out all of our information there, and you can scroll down to the Ohio Writers Guild. And we do have a free meetup, and we do have a course, and we do have a mastermind. And Sandy is my co-host in all three of those. So please jump on board and check us out, what we have to offer, and go to that writer's workshop that Sandy is putting together. It's going to be a great weekend in August. So with that, we are going to go. I don't have anyone or any questions popping up in the chat. So I will put the replay at kathybinner.com, scroll down to the free meetup and just click through and get all our replays. And great. So we'll see everyone next month here on the Ohio Writers Guild, and we'll see everyone in August at the Writers Workshop
in
Yellow Springs.
I look forward to it.